All eyes are on the Welsh city of Newport as NATO leaders convene for a summit. On the agenda is the situation in eastern Ukraine, the growing threat of ISIL, and NATO's ability to adapt to threats faced by the world today. What began as an alliance against the former Soviet Union, NATO's role has evolved and surpassed both militarily and politically. In this edition of the debate, we discuss whether NATO is really the anchor of security its members portray it to be, or is it merely the European wing of the US's armed forces? Stay tuned.
NATO heads of state have convened in the Welsh city of Newport for a two-day summit. The crisis in Ukraine is dominating the discussions. NATO Secretary General Anders Fogh Rasmussen says the summit is taking place in a dramatically changed security environment with Russia attacking Ukraine. European leaders are set to discuss a new round of tougher economic measures against Russia. NATO and Britain have warned that pressure on Russia will increase if it does not change course. The West says it has evidence that Russian President Vladimir Putin is supporting Ukraine's pro-Russian militias with training and arms and has sent Russian troops across the border to help them. Russia denies the accusation. This as anti-war demonstrators have taken to the streets of Newport against the NATO summit. Protesters call for member states to cut military spending, with some protesters saying that NATO should be dissolved.
I think NATO should be disbanded. I think it's an old Cold War relic. I think it contributes to the problems. I think it's really fanning the flames of a new Cold War, and that we need to strengthen the UN and dissolve NATO.
British Prime Minister David Cameron claims that NATO brings stability and security to countries around the world.
NATO is the anchor of our security. And over the next 2 days, we must reinvigorate and refocus this alliance to tackle new threats and to ensure it continues to foster stability around the world.
This as NATO presence in Afghanistan has failed to bring stability to the war-torn country in the wake of the US-led invasion. And now the US plans to retain about 10,000 forces in the country after 2014, a deadline that has been set for all NATO military operations in the country. NATO says Afghan forces are not well trained and fully equipped to fight the Taliban insurgents, so they need the military alliance's help. Amnesty International says US-led forces risk leaving Afghanistan with a legacy of impunity unless those foreign troops responsible for the death of civilians are brought to justice. US-led troops waged the war here back in 2001 to what they claim dismantle the Taliban and Al-Qaeda and promote democracy. However, 13 years on, militancy is still on the rise, and it is the locals who usually take the brunt of attacks. This is while unemployment and poverty still remain a huge problem there. NATO also played a critical role in the war on Libya in 2011 for the declared purpose of bringing democracy to the country. But the North African country is now torn apart between rival militia groups. The Western military alliance has so far refused to help in fighting ISIL terrorists who've taken many innocent lives both in Iraq and Syria and violated all international laws.
Well, let me begin by introducing our guests. From London, we're being joined by Ken O'Keefe. He's a former U.S. Marine. And from Washington, we're being joined by Brent Badowski. He's a columnist with The Hill. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us in this edition of the debate. Mr. Badowski, I'll start with you. Now, those who question the relevancy of NATO in the 21st century, the post-Soviet era, point to how the alliance has shifted its role from territorial defense to basically power projection in different regions. Do you see it that way?
No. I think what NATO is doing now is defending the sanctity of borders. The common denominator between ISIL and Vladimir Putin in Ukraine is they're attacking the very concept of borders. And the concept of borders is what has brought stability to Europe since the Second World War. Even during the Cold War, except for those Soviet invasions of Czechoslovakia and Hungary and other places, which Putin reminds us of. In the Middle East, ISIL, is attacking the very concept of borders and trying to create its own terrorist state over the borders between Iraq and Syria. What NATO is trying to do, and I support what NATO is trying to do, is to bring some stability, to bring back respect for borders, and to protect the security of people. You cannot have a world where another Russian leader, another Russian dictator, decides he's going to start invading his neighbor, subverting his neighbor, and attacking his neighbor, which is what Putin has done in. The only thing I would add to that is we need a broader definition than NATO of security. I'd like to see the Arab League and Arab Muslim countries play a much bigger role to destroy ISIL. And I think you want to bring democratic countries around the world, and I'd like to see the UN play a bigger role. But NATO, I think, is doing the right thing to protect the security of countries and the sanctity of borders.
Mr. O'Keefe, your response to that, is NATO really protecting sanctity of borders?
It sounds like a comedy routine to me. The idea that NATO is protecting the sanctity of borders while it sits in Afghanistan, a country that was invaded on the pretext of Osama bin Laden and 19 hijackers overwhelming the extreme apparatus military system of the United States, has since become very, very knowingly false. Osama bin Laden was never even charged because the FBI admitted that there simply was no evidence to support the idea that he couldn't be charged, much less convicted. And yet, here we sit, all these years later, the United States, Britain, only having left fairly recently, and NATO, which is supposed to protect the sanctity of European borders, is sitting in Afghanistan teaching us a lesson about the sanctity of borders. This is absolutely ludicrous. And for this gentleman, which I'm sure he'll say, to suggest that Putin is the problem and that it is Putin who is violating the sanctity of borders, while again the United States, the country where he's broadcasting from, has invaded Iraq, Afghanistan, Yemen, and Pakistan with their drones and is killing innocent civilians halfway around the world, much less on their border, is beyond absurdity. But I'm enjoying his talk because it gives me lots of material to respond to, so I look forward to the next load of bogus, ridiculous arguments he has to come up with.
Mr. Brodowski, I know that you have a response. However, in your first answer, you mentioned Russia and Vladimir Putin multiple times. And I think that raises the issue here, as many have pointed out, that NATO and its supporters are stuck in this Cold War mentality where Russia is always the bad guy, and NATO and such draconian alliances need to be maintained to basically balance that off, even though we are in a world which is very different from what it was in the Cold War era.
Well, first of all, I opposed the war in Iraq when George Bush wanted to do it, and I opposed it early and often. But I do want to say to the gentleman we're debating with here, if he thinks it's funny, he should say it's funny to the families of 400 dead people from a plane that was shot down of Malaysian Airlines by Russian weapons and Russian-supported people. I don't think they're laughing right now. I don't think they believe it's funny, and I think he's wrong about that. Now, I do think that what NATO has to do is work with the United Nations, work with the Arab League, build diplomatic solutions and political solutions, but I am sorry. It was Vladimir Putin that attacked Ukraine. It was Vladimir Putin who sent people in. And with all due respect, if my colleague here served in the United States Marine Corps, I salute and praise your services. But 98% of the members of the United States Marine Corps agree with me right now.
Mr. O'Keefe, your response?
Well, I simply am marveling by the statistic. 98% of the military of the United States would like to get involved in another war. That's very odd, because the last presidential candidate that actually opposed all of these imperial endeavors, namely Ron Paul, made it very clear that he would not continue any of these imperial endeavors, and he enjoyed more support from active duty military than any other candidate. In fact, he enjoyed more support than all of them combined. The only thing that the American soldiers that are having to fight these wars, that these chicken hawks, these traitors who have sworn to uphold the U.S. Constitution and yet have violated that oath on a million different ways from Sunday, if there are U.S. soldiers who are fancying another war and would like to go off and kill or be killed and then come back home, become drug addicts, alcoholics, wife beaters, and commit suicide, Well, I'm a bit miffed by that because as far as I can tell, having been a combat Marine, I certainly wouldn't want to go fight yet another imperial war in which nobody benefits, including the country we devastate. And whether you agreed with Iraq or not doesn't change the fact that you are sitting here spouting an agenda which will cost invariably more lives, and you are sitting here propping up the idea that we have yet another boogeyman, this time Putin, yesterday Osama bin Laden, ISIS. There'll always be some boogeyman for us to go out and use our military prowess to go and kill countless amounts of people. The American people may be stupid and maybe even support this madness, but I don't believe so at all, and I certainly don't believe that 98% of the American military support yet another invasion in which they will pay the price.
Now, let me answer that, if I may. I did not say that they support an invasion. What I did say is, number one, they stand by NATO. 98% of the Marine Corps and the rest of the military and the American people and the people in Europe support NATO. It doesn't mean they support every policy. They support NATO. Number two, 98% of the people of the Marine Corps of America, of Europe, and by the way, an overwhelming majority of Muslims, both Shia and Sunni, think that ISIL are criminals, gangsters, murderers, terrorists, psychotics, who should be destroyed. And in fact, I would say that
the United States through their proxies in Saudi Arabia and Qatar.
Please, let me finish, then you'll have your time. That what will happen with what will become the attack against ISIL and their terrorist, gangster, murdering, genocidal state will bring together
supported by
Sunnis
Qatar and Saudi
Shia
Arabia,
from all over
proxies.
The Middle East. From all over the Middle, please let me finish, okay? From all over the Middle East, it will bring together Shia and Sunnis who are threatened by that. Now, in terms of, if you're going to argue that 98% of the people of the Marine Corps, America, Europe, Eastern Europe, do not oppose what Vladimir Putin has done, I'm sorry, they do, okay? That doesn't mean we go to war. It does mean we have to have stronger sanctions, including financial sanctions across the board, which I hope are instituted soon. And number two, there would be some form of a limited 8,000 to 10,000 person rapid deployment force that will hopefully include US, Europe, and some Muslim countries if it's aimed at ISIS. But that's what we're talking about. I could tell you 20 policies I disagreed with over the last few years, and I'm not suggesting that most Americans even agree with those policies. But destroying ISIL, destroying people, mass murdering, genocide, ethnic cleansing, you bet they do support that. You bet Europe and Americans support that. You bet a majority of Muslims, Shia and Sunni in the Middle East support that. They don't want any part of ISIL attacking them any more than they want to attack Americans. And if you don't have a problem with Vladimir Putin's guns shooting down a Malaysian Airlines and killing 400 innocent people, we disagree on that. But the Marine Corps, the people of the United States and Europe, and most people in the Middle East don't want Russian guns blowing up planes, killing 400 people after they've invaded and attacked a country.
Apparently, this man is privy to information that the rest of us aren't, because if you've got proof positive that Putin ordered the downing of that Malaysian Airlines flight in total absence of the understanding of how false flag operations
I didn't say he ordered it. I said his guns did it.
Who are you blaming for it? Who did it?
Putin's policy. Putin's weapons. You bet.
Putin's policy? Oh, that's good. Anyway, let's get back to ISIL, ISIS, IS, whatever they call themselves tomorrow. Are you denying the fact that our proxies in Saudi Arabia and Qatar and the Arab Emirates also funded these psychopaths while they were beheading and otherwise terrorizing the entire sovereign nation of Syria? Are you denying that our little proxies, our disgusting little allies called Saudi Arabia and Qatar, have been funding these madmen and that we have been supporting this madness? Are you also going to deny that the United States funded and supported and trained and coddled and protected the so-called Mujahideen who became Al-Qaeda and has been protecting them through all these years, including the 19 hijackers who were given free access to the United States when they were running around being the stupid little assets of the CIA that they were? Are you denying that we have supported this madness because we apparently want to see the end of Bashar al-Assad because we care so much about the people of Syria and we care so much about the people of Iraq and so very much about the people of Afghanistan? If you believe the nonsense that you are speaking, then shame on you for being such a fool.
But let me ask you this, sir, with all due respect. What exactly do you believe we should do with ISIL? I believe we should destroy them. What do you believe?
The first thing that needs
to
happen is for all of the traitors.
Answer that once.
I will answer that question. The first thing that we need to do is for all red-blooded American patriots who swore to uphold the U.S. Constitution to fulfill their duty and arrest the traitors in the United States Congress and White House who also swore to uphold that Constitution and who have defiled it. And every I'm answering your question the way I choose to answer your question. I will answer your question. Once we get rid of the traitors, once we get rid of the traitors within the U.S. government, the enemy within inside the gate, once we get rid of these traitors, we can then start to pull funding for Saudi Arabia, for Qatar, and arming these proxies. I would stop the funding.
What would you do?
I would stop the funding at its source. I would stop funding Saudi Arabia and Qatar and providing political cover to these absolute criminals who have been providing these psychopaths who are beheading people with the weapons they use to devastate Syria and to devastate Iraq.
You would not attack them.
I would cut off their funding.
Is that what you said?
I would cut off their funding.
So you,
from
you,
our allies.
Yes or no, would you attack them? They are there now.
No, I would not. I would help the people trying to defend their sovereign nation, including Syria, which has been fighting these psychopaths for the last three years.
What percent of the United States Marine Corps do you believe agrees with you that we should not attack ISIL and let them keep mass murdering genocide people?
If you think I form my opinions based on what
they all agree with me, sir,
the U.S. military think, you are deadly wrong. I could care less what 98% of the U.S. military thinks, especially if they are so stupid as to want to get involved in yet another imperial endeavor. If 100% of them feel that way, I disagree.
Now we agree on that. I'm glad you agree on that with me, that almost all the American military want to destroy ISIL. All the Marines, the Air Force, the American people, the European people, Muslims,
Shia and Sunni faith all over the Middle East. In response to that question, when this false flag operation last year in Syria occurred, in which that huge drum war petition of people saying that we needed to go and attack Syria, you know who it was who opposed it? It was U.S. military members who held up signs saying, I did not join the U.S. military to fight for Al-Qaeda in Syria. And now all of a sudden, when they threaten Israeli interests in Mosul and up in the oil region of Iraq, now all of a sudden you want to go bomb the people that were actually devastating Syria. Why didn't you want to bomb them when they were in Syria?
I want to bomb the people who are beheading. I want to bomb the people who are doing ethnic cleansing and genocide. I want to bomb the people who are threatening Britain, who are threatening
America. So you wanted to provide assistance to Bashar al-Assad. Tell me that you wanted to provide assistance to Bashar al-Assad when he was fighting these psychopaths in Syria. Is that correct?
Sir, you have spent 8 minutes refusing to be willing to attack ISIL. Almost all the
ISIL
Americans,
is the CIA.
Europeans,
I want to get rid of
the Marines.
I want to get rid of ISIL and Al-Qaeda at its source.
But you're going to let them keep killing people while you have intellectual debates about other things. I'm telling you now.
And you're going to be so stupid as a chicken hawk to send off more sons and daughters to die in yet another senseless war that will only devastate everybody in the region in which it's partaken.
A majority of Sunnis and Shias throughout the Middle East agree with me that ISIL should be destroyed. Period.
They're disgusting.
It's an opportunity to bring together Sunnis
and CIA.
Well, everybody is but you. You must be a heck of a guy.
Yeah.
All right, let me jump in there. We are running out of time. Mr. Badowski, I'd put this question to you. We've seen NATO's role in Afghanistan. Let's not forget, as today's summit was being opened, 18 people were killed by a Taliban attack in Afghanistan. They still remain a problem and a force to be reckoned with, as many have said. So this brings up that age-old question of, is the military option ever a viable option?
Well, it must be accompanied with a political option and a diplomatic option. So the answer is military is never enough alone, nor is NATO alone. I have said that we ought to be able to bring in the Arab League and Muslim nations, Shia and Sunni, to destroy ISIL. I also believe it's important economics. We don't have time to discuss it now. But it is a very positive thing that the European Central Bank finally lowered interest rates 5 years too late, but it's a good thing because we have to have economic opportunity. They all have to come together. It's not easy, but I'll tell you this, what NATO is doing now is to defend and protect Western security. I think it's very interesting that we're talking about a ceasefire and diplomatic negotiations that Putin agrees to now because NATO is meeting to talk about sanctions and to talk about a rapid deployment force. It's called deterrent.
Well, Mr. O'Keefe, I'll put the same question to you. You have 1 minute. Is the military option ever a viable option, even if it's coupled with whatever steps Mr. Badowski has just outlined?
I firmly believe in the right of self-defense. And when your country is being invaded and your people are being killed and your land is being stolen and you're being occupied, you have every right to defend yourself. But this is the only justification for war. And yet, the American Empire, the country of my birth, has extended its terrorism around the world. It has killed millions and millions and maimed tens of millions. It is the continuous state-sponsored terrorist of the world. And never, never ever are we going to have justice, much less peace in this world, as long as we allow the Empire of America and all its crony, pathetic minions in NATO and the EU to carry out these insane policies. They're not intended to bring peace. They're intended to foster an never-ending cycle of war.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there. That was Ken O'Keefe, former U.S. Marine, joining us from London, from Washington. It's columnist with The Hill, Brent Badowski. Gentlemen, thank you for that very heated conversation there. And to our viewers for joining us. Until next time, it's goodbye.